Awesome.
It's mid-school year, and tensions are often hot around now. Not because of being tired, not because of the kids at all, actually. It's because around now, most years and for most districts, it's negotiation time. In this episode, I'm going to dive into what a contract negotiation does on a macro scale to an educational district as a whole. Then we're going to talk about how to get out of it. I'm doing this because I know the impact that this has on teachers. I know the impact that this has on much needed programs and staffing. I know the impact this has on salaries, our livelihoods, and on the students as well. Because lest we forget, that's why we're here, for them. It's a thankless job being an educator for the most part. And this episode is dedicated to how we can redefine gratitude when in the middle of hectic negotiations. Folks, my name is Joe Colossi, and I'm the host of the Traveling Principal podcast, a show synonymous to the feelings you get when you hear your school's name called on the radio that you have a two-hour delay. OMG, I'm dating myself with that one because it was usually AM radio, too, that we had to listen to. Holy cow. We're having fun. Okay. Wow. So, team, here we are. I just climbed a ladder to the top at a circus, and I have a tight rope to walk in front of me. So let's take the first step. The teachers need at least COLA annually. And if this was mandated annually regardless, then district spending would fluctuate accordingly. And a reverse perspective to spending would enable this year after year. Instead of the reverse strategy, which is in place almost everywhere, which allows for a perspective that those at the top make what they do, and it's at the expense of those below. Let me just repeat that again. If it was mandated annually that teachers and educators, we factored in COLA, then district spending would fluctuate accordingly, and a reverse perspective to spending would enable this year after year. So to go off on a tangent there for a second, as a quasi-superintendent in my last role, constantly in the middle of this negotiation, which I'll dive into a little deeper as we go in this episode, I was able to work with financial people who would say to me, well, this is what they're predicting and this is what they're talking about because they're following it a year prior. And so we would ballpark it throughout the year as we came up with our predictions and we would spend accordingly. And this made it easy. Okay, now on a macro scale, for all of these traditionally comprehensive districts, that is a major overhaul in the perspective of spending. And so here we are, right? When the notion of that not possibly be needing to be factored in, such as like COLA, that's like bananas, right? So if your job isn't allowing you to be able to keep up with your daily bills, spending habits, etc., as a teacher within your means of the salary range that you're being given, I mean, wow, why do it, right? Like if it's not, if you're not getting it, I hear that, all right? Hence your unions. And so, I mean, it's an awkward balance. I will say this, okay? A good superintendent is really hard to find. And so when a district gets one, they hold on to them for as long as possible. They will enable the difference due to a job description that no one wants to have, and everyone wants to say that they do, okay? Now, I also firmly believe that school boards have the ability to enable and be preventative to the growth of students. Sometimes this is at the expense of maintaining authority. I mean, true, they hold massive power over hundreds and thousands of people and kids, and maybe this gets to them. But last I checked, when a district gets money or has money, why not spend it? It's not yours. If you're saving for something like a new building or what have you, we report this annually and it's agreed upon prior and consented publicly. Does this system of purchasing work? I don't know, sort of. It makes it easy to highlight complaints about purchases after the fact, even though they were done with consent and approval. But it makes it easy to justify purchases because they are done with consent and approval. And so it goes, right? The old Vonnegut saying. But if a teacher, as a teacher, I guess, let's look at it from that lens, right? I knew I would have an adjusted salary via COLA calculations. Like, if I knew that was coming, I may not have much to say if I knew I could keep up with the economy. Now, some years this may not be very much, but others, it could be massive. And that's when everybody wins. From literally being a liaison between a school board and a union for 10 years, you guys, in addition to being on the front line of creating the contract for that union, I can tell you some of the numbers that are thrown around because it's a negotiation, meaning with the intent to go back and forth to settle on a compromise. These numbers are nuts. Here's a really tough pill to swallow. No other job, no other career, no other industry besides education gives you more money every year guaranteed. That just does not exist. If it did, people would try to do that career or task. But a teacher's, an administrator's, support staff, custodians, clerical, district personnel, and anyone else I've missed, you are on salary scales with rows and columns, and upon a successful evaluation, annually, you advance. So, if you're still listening and I haven't pissed you all off yet, here's this. At the other end of the result is a student. Some I've gotten to learn are so small and cute that they're literally falling asleep in an IEP because they're tired and exhausted at the end of a day, which was just absolutely hysterical. But it's that kid and thousands of others that will pay the ultimate price of the time spent in a negotiation, hands down. So what do we do? Well, here's what I did. I went in and sped up the negotiation as much as possible with ensuring voices are heard, committees have responded based on logical perspectives of allowable resources, and a clear macro perspective on the district's enrollment, which meant I had to interpret and share and reach out and have the conversations with both parties. When teachers are given double-digit numbers and the school had clearly expressed plans with no way of funding that type of a percentage bonus or increase of a request, the response from a board is going to be a fat zero, right? If the staff knows already, oh, we have a new school coming up, we have a relocation coming up, we have this coming up, we have an addition, an expansion, a restoration, whatever, and yet they're saying we want 12%. How does that correlate to find like a happy medium? Does it mean something is pushed off, delayed? You know, do we find other funding? Do we consider maybe a number that's more realistic and settle upon that? This delays things. So instead, I knew the number that the board was working with. I knew their percentage that they had. Maybe they would say to me, Joe, we can do anywhere from 1% to 5%. 1% to 5%. I know the high end of the teacher's demand as I then go and meet with them. And then I offer ballparks with possible outcomes to both sides. As results, I dictate the conversations by giving choices, not open-ended demands that are responses. Oh, here the teachers' union said 12. That's so open-ended and can be looked at in every which way you could possibly imagine. I'm not fond of that style. That delays things. By dictating that conversation, right, it avoids times when both sides are irrational. I mean, in order to end in any sort of conclusion whatsoever. You have to be able to say, here's a guided choice or selection of choices for you. You can't just say, what do you need? Now, when this is not the case and eventually cuts are then passed down, this isn't good for anybody. If you are a school board, please consider that the actions you're taking impact the kids you serve. You are in control. No one doubts this. But everyone has to vote for you again. And that's not a way to win votes. Remember why you're in that position. To make a difference, to define improvement, to lead. If you are trying to send messages, if you are trying to make statements, if you are going to great lengths to make your side's perspective loud and clear, you are not being heard at all. All you are doing is invoking the emotional reaction of the others to see what they will do in response to your flex. No one wins here. When emotions are involved, it's bad. I'm seeing situations like this, so here's what I would do if I was in schools and what I've always actually tried to do as well. Simple list, not brain surgery. Number one, celebrate. I always say that. Celebrate staff, celebrate students. Remember what you currently have and what you are currently doing and why it's working. Which points are positive blame here on teachers? Positive blame. They are with the boots on the ground, so celebrate. Communicate clearly as well. As someone on both sides, this skill is crucial. Ultimately, this is done best when just being honest. When you have the no, don't tell them, or don't let them know, or you know, don't let them believe that this is what's going on. That's when things get weird. Now is the time to show positive data that has been impacted by your school's existing plans and staff. Now is the time, the best time, to make an appealing entrance or a statement of pride or work on something communal on the campus. Unveil something a month from now. What initiative can your school be a part of that redirects focus? What are you guys either in need of or really good at? And do it. That stuff is easy, man. That stuff is fun. Now is the best time to gather everyone up and say, what are we going to do for the kids today? Because you know what? By doing so, not only will they benefit, but taking the high road and continuing to produce will only show true colors brightest. This hammers points home, considering value, and it reminds those that need it of why they should redirect as well. I know I said unions give out numbers that are outrageous. I know I said board members can use their authority in ways that can negatively impact kids. And I know both are true. I've seen it. I've gotten the number because it had padded cushion for lowering in negotiations and wondered, why not just go in with what you need? This sends a terrible, greedy message that can bankrupt school districts and delay this process tremendously. I know I said that funding and purchasing is public, which means people have a say. And I know I said at times this can be used as evidence after the fact, because that's what it is. But it doesn't make it go away. It can only influence an outcome that is then going to be emotionally driven. Educators need COLA, at the very least. I'll even repeat that. I said that one earlier. It's a job, man. This is a career. We need to do it well because we are of sound body and mind, not hungry, and spend what we have on our students. But this is not a lucrative career, and it never has been. My first salary as a teacher in New York City was $28,000 a year. If you take a superintendent and put them with the same responsibilities in the private sector, they are millionaires, y'all. A person in charge of thousands usually makes millions in the private sector. And having been in a quasi role of a superintendent, I do not and never will want that job. It's bananas. And it's mainly about politics more than education. But those that do it correctly are seen with both lenses. While all this is happening, while union heads go to lunch and take days thinking of and apparently reading through contracts, which I think if we were to look at how to save, maybe perhaps where your dues go and on what something maybe, you know, what you're spending them on, maybe something like transparent as well, and yet never really looked at as a school budget. Right? We look at our school budgets with a fine-tooth comb. Do you look at where your dues go? But it's synonymous to spending on administration at the highest levels nonetheless. Both sides pay for independent contractors due to grunt work of this process. Both sides get lawyers due to the hard parts, and someone else types it all up if ever. And so all that needs to be done is to consider why we are here and have your answer resolved something around because it's what's in the best interest of our kids. If you do this, you're going to sign a contract. Sometimes this means giving a lot of money to underpaid staff. Sometimes this means settling for less. Sometimes this means cuts. Sometimes this means bonuses. Most times it means eating crow. Knowing this is a roller coaster of endless loops and drops from high to low, how are you keeping it about the kids based on the role that you play? And you all play a role. You are all a factor. You all work with kids and are employed at school sites, so you play a role. What will you do? Celebrate, drive student output and performance, highlight positive initiatives or create them if you haven't yet and need to, because this is a recipe for justifiable, conclusive focus on what matters most. Whew, I think we made it across. Thanks for listening to this week's show. I heard from a fan about a lesson plan episode I put out not long ago, and I'm thinking about what to do to get more of that to you guys, and I'll keep you posted in the interim. I got my man Mitch Weathers on the show coming up because he just published a book, Executive Functions of for Educators. So you can pick that up on Amazon. I'm super stoked for my man, so we'll have him come on and talk to us about exactly what that is. I guarantee you don't want to miss that. I also have an international leader that's going to share their thoughts on American schools that I'm stoked for you guys to start to factor into the regular show. My name is Joe Colussi, signing off saying the best way to negotiate is to create a transparent way to keep the focus on happy teachers, happy administrators, and happy support staff, so you have happy students.